I'm psychologist Dr. Michael Broder. A larger proportion of adults are single today than at any other time in history. Some people are single by choice, while others consider singlehood a lifestyle they would never choose. In this program, we're going to explore practically all aspects of single life and how to make it work for you, regardless of why you're single and regardless of whether it's a temporary or permanent lifestyle. Throughout this program, there will be numerous opportunities to look at the material in a way that lets you apply the issues I talk about specifically to your life. Most of what you'll hear, you'll readily identify with. Some parts of this program, you'll want to listen to over and over again, while other parts may not apply to you at all. But it's important that you listen to the entire program and keep a pencil and paper handy for the exercises and in order to take note of those items that particularly strike home. By the end of this program, you'll have your own custom-made survival guide. Feel free to stop the tape at any point where you find you may need a moment or two to reflect on what's being said, or when you want to take time to think about how to apply the information to your own unique situation. Some people find it most helpful to listen to the program all the way through before doing any of the exercises. For others, it's more beneficial to attempt the exercises during the first listening. The exercises are designed to enable you to put some of the most difficult aspects of single life into a workable perspective. This is something you may never have done before. Most importantly, I invite you to consider this program to be a constant source of support that you know will always be there for you whenever you can use it. I have based this program on over 20 years of clinical experience I gained in my practice as a psychologist, including the time when I wrote the popular book, The Art of Living Single. While writing this book, I interviewed scores of single people who I would not ordinarily have seen in my practice and seminars. I learned what worked for them, and this program is based, in addition to other things, on that consensus. While writing The Art of Living Single, I made it a point to ask every person I interviewed these two questions. What is the best advantage that you could tell me about being single? And what is the worst disadvantage you find about being single? You might want to think about and note how you would answer these questions. Practically everyone I interviewed pointed to the awesome amount of freedom and choice that a single lifestyle provided them as being the best thing about single life. This even came from people who swore that life as a single is something they would never choose in 1,000 years. If you're wondering what came up most often as the worst, it was the feelings of loneliness and isolation that are sometimes a byproduct of single life. In other words, choice and freedom and all the benefits of healthy selfishness are what you get along with being single if you can take advantage of them. But like practically everything else in life, there's a price, or a flip side. And the price of living single is often experiencing those feelings of loneliness. We'll talk about what they are and how to conquer them. Once you've learned how to do that, and then experience and enjoy your power and freedom to the fullest, it will take quite a person to get you to give up the single life in favor of another relationship. By contrast, so many people get into one bad relationship after another, not out of a desire for that other person, but because of their anxieties about and frustration with single life. And I've met so many people over the years who've stayed in horrendous and even abusive relationships simply out of a fear of almost phobic proportions of being single. In fact, I even coined a phrase, single phobia, to explain why some people stay in such bad relationships. These reasons include financial ones, the fear of never finding another partner, being a social outcast, disappointing other people, or the loss of social status. And some of the unhappiest people I've ever met had the belief that it could never be anything short of horrible not to be in a relationship. If this sounds familiar, by working on your fears and insecurities regarding single life, you won't get into a new relationship again out of fear. In fact, I believe that if people would stop being afraid to go it alone and then leave non-working, unfulfilling, or abusive relationships, the current divorce rate would temporarily be much higher. One survey, which eliminated this fear factor, put the divorce rate at somewhere between 70 and 80%. On the other hand, when next you choose to be in a relationship, your choice will be made out of desire. I'm sure you can see how important it is to make this distinction. So here are some attitudes you can adopt to deepen your feelings of freedom. Those for whom singlehood works, even if it's just for a short period of time in between relationships, seem to have these outlooks in common. Instead of defining quality time only as time spent with other people, learn to truly cherish your own company. Develop interests that you can enjoy alone. Make a strong conscious effort to stop making solitary activity merely a consolation prize. In fact, if you let it happen, you'll find that if you don't already, you can actually learn to love your own company. After all, when you get into a love relationship, aren't you in essence asking someone else to enjoy or love your company? And it's your attitude, not so much external circumstances, that determines for you whether being alone is an exhilarating experience or a horror. It becomes an exhilarating experience when you can appreciate the unlimited power you have over your own destiny, a byproduct of being single. You have the right to your own space and to be alone. Most people wouldn't even think of telling someone who invited them out to do something, "I'd rather spend some time alone today." Usually a good excuse has you doing something with another person. Think about that. For some people, the only excuse that's socially acceptable which involves being alone is to be sick. I remember one time I was at a conference in New York City. I was giving several presentations and had to attend a number of long meetings. On one grueling day of constant stimulation, we had a two-hour dinner break. The group of people I was spending the day with were all going out for dinner together, and they assumed that I was coming along. Instead, I told them that I had some other plans and that I'd see them at our meeting later on that evening. In fact, my plans were to take a magazine and to go to a nice restaurant, relax, and have a quiet dinner by myself. After all, I've been doing a great deal of talking that day, and there was still more to do after dinner. Well, don't you know it? There are over 20,000 restaurants in New York City, and this group of people walked right into the one where I was sitting peacefully and reading my magazine. They came over to me and said, "What's wrong? I thought you had plans." And I said, "Yes, I do. My plans are to have a nice, quiet dinner alone." I certainly acted as though there was nothing wrong with it, but still got lots of funny looks. So after I explained, people understood. A few of them later on even confided to me that they too would have rather had a conversation-less dinner that night, but were afraid of seeming aloof or offending their colleagues. Practically every single person that I've ever talked to has anecdotes like this where they felt a need to make excuses. So never feel defensive about your right to be alone. Next, it's essential that you stop living as though you're in a state of transition. Even if you really would prefer to be part of a couple, living as though you're in transition can be the worst of all possible worlds. I'll have more to say about this later on. Part of enjoying your lifestyle as a single person involves managing your finances, choosing a living space that you're proud of, and making the most of your vacation time. Singles who ignore these important aspects of their lives usually do so because they look upon their lifestyle as only temporary. And as you'll see, this is also an attitude that can take its toll on you. Take a moment to think about how you might not be taking advantage of the choices that your single lifestyle and all the freedom that goes with it affords you. Whether or not being single is a lifestyle you've chosen, you'll find it most helpful to start a list of the issues you need to work on. Throughout the program, I'll be suggesting that you make several lists, which can become your own custom survival guide in order to help you focus on the areas of your life that need the most attention. If this is a convenient time to do so, work on this list of things you can do to better take advantage of the freedom and choices that are now part of your life. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. The feelings you probably want most to eliminate are the ones of loneliness and isolation that are also inevitably, but not exclusively, part of the single life. In my experience as a psychologist, combined with what I learned from writing my two books, The Art of Living Single, followed by The Art of Staying Together, taught me that loneliness is just as prevalent in married couples as it is in singles. But there's one major difference with couples. Because they have a partner, they tend to blame that icky feeling we know of as loneliness on their partners, and even tend to call it something else, like lack of communication or being unfulfilled. Singles have no alternative but to blame themselves for the lack of fulfillment they feel. That's right. The loneliness that you feel as a single is the same sense of emptiness that sometimes comes when you're part of a couple. Think about the last time you were in a relationship. If and when you were feeling empty and unhappy with the relationship, weren't those emotions very similar to the ones of loneliness and isolation that you may sometimes experience as a single person? So the cure for loneliness is not merely putting someone else in your life. That would be a temporary solution, but it's rarely a permanent one. The real solution to loneliness is first to recognize and then to change the attitudes that produce your lonely feelings. They include the notion that the whole world is having a party to which you're not invited. The idea that you're trapped in this horrendous lifestyle with no way out. Or the belief that you're unlovable. Perhaps you tell yourself, if I weren't unlovable, I'd be happily in an ideal relationship. To the extent that you tell yourself these irrational self-statements, or any variations of them, being alone, especially at certain times, becomes felt as isolation and loneliness rather than as the very nourishing feeling of solitude. Solitude and loneliness are different ways you can look at being alone. They are bookends. One defines your alone state in positive terms, the other defines it in negative terms. Now let's take a look at some other attitudes behind loneliness and contrast them with winning attitudes which can turn the same situation or experience of being alone into the very positive and self-nourishing feeling that comes with solitude. At the very least, solitude will make your life as a single person tolerable. At best, incredibly enjoyable. If you tell yourself that being alone gets so bad that I don't know how I'll ever survive, then your attitude is the self-defeating one of loneliness. Instead, consider the solitude version of that same theme. I've survived loneliness in the past. Furthermore, I know I can choose not only to survive my alone time, but actually to cherish it. Or if you tell yourself no matter how little or how much time I spend alone, it feels like too much to me. Instead, try this affirmation or positive self-statement. I can choose to look forward to my alone time as a special opportunity for self-nourishment and introspection. When you find that you're telling yourself other people don't feel as lonely as I do, try the more realistic alternative, which would say, I imagine that practically everyone feels lonely at one time or another, but being lonely does not make me less of a person. If you dwell on the past and tell yourself, I regret many past actions that have led to my present lonely situation, try this affirmation instead. Dwelling on the past will get me nowhere. If I can refuse to be overcome by loneliness, I can then decide either to spend my time alone or with others of my own choosing. Finally, if you tell yourself, if someone would only reach out to me, I wouldn't feel so lonely, try instead to develop the alternative attitude that whenever I choose, I can reach out to others as an alternative to being alone. Take a few minutes to think about what it is you could be telling yourself when your feelings of loneliness crop up. Write them down, either the ones that I've just suggested that you identify with, or your own variations of those themes. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. After you've identified the attitudes that get you in trouble, try coming up with your own affirmations or statements of self-support. Write them down in the survival guide we discussed earlier in the program. During your lonely times, you can refer to your affirmations. They will help you to put the attitudes that cause loneliness into perspective and will serve to be an invaluable source of self-support at those times when you can use support the most. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Another suggestion is to write your affirmations and other key parts of your survival guide on 3x5 cards, then keep the cards in your wallet or another handy place where they'll be easy to reach for. Refer to them during those lonely times when you may need them the most. Using affirmations to counteract your self-defeating beliefs will practically always work for you if only you can remember to use them. Some people find it even more helpful to take the 3x5 cards with their most valuable affirmations to their car dashboard, refrigerator, or somewhere else where they can't help but see them regularly. Eventually, these affirmations will become new attitudes, which will become automatic for you, the same way the self-defeating ones previously were. Overcoming that painful feeling of loneliness is a matter of strategy. Consider and use some of these ideas as you see fit. Take a look at your self-defeating beliefs at a time other than when they're upsetting you. In other words, don't wait until those moments when you're overwhelmed with emotion to work on your loneliness problem. Because at those times, usually the best you can hope for is to get past the crisis. At a time when you're in a happy or neutral frame of mind could be the best time to have a talk with the you that sometimes feels susceptible to bouts of loneliness. Think of your self-help literally as helping a friend who may have some of the same issues you do. But what makes it possible for you to be able to help your friend is the fact that while you're feeling grounded, they're not. With some practice, you can choose to be a rational friend to your emotional self. Also, at a time when you're feeling overwhelmed with emotion such as loneliness, try using the act as if technique. Challenge yourself to act as if your life were full right now. If this were the case, what would you be doing differently? What is it you can't do now that you could do if you believed your life were as full as you wanted it to be? Ask yourself, is it really true that I can't feel any differently right now? What's making you tell yourself that you can't? Another variation of this theme is to imagine that you have unlimited capabilities. Then ask yourself, what do I want to do now? Suppose I were as immune to this pain as I wished I were. What would I do differently? How would I change my life? What do I need to do to produce these changes within myself? If something comes to mind as you ponder these questions right now, turn off the tape and take some notes. Then put what you've written in your survival guide and save it for a time when you can use it the most. Remember, once again, you're being a rational friend to your emotional self and there are no strings attached. When feelings of loneliness seem overwhelming, resist the urge to do things you'll be sorry for later. For example, if your loneliness seems unbearable, you might have the urge to contact an ex-partner, whereas in the right frame of mind, you wouldn't even consider it. Or you might be tempted to accept a job offer you ordinarily wouldn't want, just so you can move far away, or rebound into an inappropriate new relationship just to get away emotionally from the previous one. Perhaps you're so angry that you dwell on ways to hurt someone else to compensate for the hurt that you feel in yourself. It's important not to take anything to extremes when you're feeling upset. Don't lose sight of long-term consequences just to alleviate short-term pain. Also, don't believe the painful and erroneous notion that you won't survive the situation. You will survive. No emotion lasts. This goes for the positive ones as well as the negative ones. You inflict additional pain on yourself when you believe that you will not feel better later on. This is an attitude that your rational side can easily dispute when you need it to. If you can talk to someone who can provide you with empathy when your painful emotions occur, the feelings will usually pass in a matter of minutes. Of course, they may not stop permanently, but friends or family members who can be a reliable source of support for you can be invaluable. We'll talk more about friendship and your support system a little later on. Many wonderful and nourishing things can be done in solitude. Some of what we pursue in private can even touch other people's lives. Other things are merely private pursuits. In some cases, even private passions that can be infinitely rewarding when we allow ourselves to enjoy them. Just taking the opportunity to think and create can make our own company exhilarating. Consider some of these things that many enjoy alone, even when their preference may be to have company. Visiting museums, galleries, and exhibitions, or any other visual experience of something that you enjoy, such as photography or working on photo albums. Music, too, can be a very individual experience. There's no reason why you can't enjoy a concert or even a night at the opera by yourself. If you're someone who loves to read, every moment that you're alone becomes a chance to indulge, enjoy, and explore new books, newer familiar authors, and an unlimited array of new ideas. If you don't like to read by yourself, visit your local library. Gardening, playing with a pet, organizing your living arrangement, exercising, enjoying nature or traveling. One of my favorite things to do alone is dining out. Just thinking or meditating, fantasizing, or any creative activity such as writing, drawing, or taking a course in something you'd like to learn are just some things you might indulge in on your own. You might want to begin another list for your own survival guide that you can add to as we progress through the program of things you could enjoy alone, which you might not think of during those times when you're feeling lonely, especially if you're overwhelmed with emotions. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Most singles I've talked to who like or love the lifestyle generally seem to have one thing in common in addition to enjoying their own solitude, and that is they have a support system that they can count on. Members of your support system can be friends, family members, or certain professionals, such as a doctor, physician, or psychotherapist. In a good support system, with the exception of professionals where you pay for their services, the support given is mutual. In other words, you can be the giver as well as the taker. To avoid overwhelming your friends and possibly even ruining friendships, it's important to give and listen, not just take and talk. Having non-romantic friends of both sexes is ideal. Don't get caught in the trap of telling yourself you want a love relationship when what you could also use even more right now is a supportive friend. Both are great to have, but they're not necessarily interchangeable. Places such as singles organizations that have local meetings or who sponsor trips are great places to meet non-romantic friends who can become members of your support system. Many singles also make the mistake of drifting away from friends who have gotten romantically involved or who have married for fear that there's now little they have in common. Perhaps there's not as much availability, but certainly there's no reason why your circle of friends can't include couples. There are two types of friends you'll encounter in your life. One I call passers through. These are people who you may have been friendly with during a period of your life when you had a certain amount of things in common, but once that commonality changed, there was little reason to continue the friendship. The other type of friend is what I call a keeper. With keepers, you can usually transcend changes in your lives and find a way to maintain your friendship, perhaps lifelong. Keepers can be great supports for each other. regardless of whether they're in or out of a marriage or a love relationship, or even if you don't live close to each other. These friendships can do a lot to get you past your loneliness. If you've recently come out of a relationship, you may have noticed certain things that happened more automatically when you were involved now require some additional thought or effort. For example, when you were part of a couple, it was probably not as important to have plans for weekends or other times when you would want to enjoy social activities with someone else, because for better or worse, you had each other. As a single person, these things require some advanced thought and planning. Thus, another trap that many get themselves into is to wait to be invited places rather than to take the initiative. You may need to be a bit more assertive about being included in things with people you know well, instead of expecting them to automatically know what your current desires are and then act in a manner that satisfies those desires. Chances are, once you start taking the initiative for planning and inviting, reciprocal calls and invitations will begin to come back to you. Take some time now to identify the members of your support system who you can count on at those times when you prefer to have a little company or when you would like someone to reach out to when you can use a sounding board for some emotional support. Keep this list handy also for when you need it. Turn off the tape and work on this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. If you've been following these exercises along, you're well on your way to having your custom survival guide. So here's another list I'd like you to make, and this is of ways that you can take more initiative in planning or setting up social activities. Turn off the tape and make this list now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. What is it you may be doing to stay in a transition frame of mind? Is there something that you'd really like to be doing right now that you're putting off until you're in that proverbial next relationship? In other words, if you were to be totally out of transition, how would you change your life? Would you fix up or redecorate your house? Would you do something different with respect to planning your finances? Would you take a vacation? What would be your ideal living space? Have you made your house a home? By that I mean a place that's within your means, but with a permanent feel to it, as opposed to a place where you're merely staying until your next involvement? If not, how does that place differ from where you're living right now? To stop living in transition involves little more than learning a new attitude, one that says you're now going to stop putting off being alive. And rather than considering a love relationship or marriage as a necessity in order to make your life what you want it to be, instead you can think of your next relationship as a bonus. Many years ago, I was contacted by a cruise company to do a seminar for singles aboard one of the major ocean liners. The company which was sponsoring the cruise had to secure a certain number of cabins 3 or 4 months before the date the cruise was to leave. They told me initially that they were having a great deal of response to the singles cruise, but the deposits were unusually slow in coming in. I then got a call about 3 months before it was to depart, telling me that they hadn't gotten enough deposits to go ahead with the seminar cruise, so we agreed to cancel it. When it was too late either for me or the cruise company to reverse our plans and go ahead with the seminar, I was told that the deposits had started flowing in. However, since enough spaces hadn't been reserved far enough ahead of time, the ocean liner had sold those cabins elsewhere. The point is that many singles who ultimately wanted to take this cruise did not want to commit to it 4 months ahead of time. Many told the seminar promoter that they didn't want to give a deposit too soon for fear that they would meet someone in the meantime and then wouldn't want to go on a singles cruise. Thus, many lost out. This merely illustrates the all-too-prevalent attitude behind that tendency to live in transition, where it's almost as though planning ahead is seen as an admission of defeat. The seminar promoter said that he had never seen this phenomena in any other kind of cruise he'd planned. But in my experience working with singles, I was not at all surprised. Take a moment now to think about what you would change in your life if you could see yourself as being totally out of transition. Turn off the tape and work on this list now, add it to your survival guide, and then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Here are some other items you may want to consider adding to that post-transition list you just started. I want to invite others over or go out more often. I want to have more sports and fitness activities in my life. I want to spend more time with other single people who can be part of my support group. I want to have a party or entertain more in my own home. I want to get away from it all or simply create more fun even if I'm by myself. I would like to work on my own personal growth issues and spirituality more. I want to begin or get more involved with a hobby or avocation. And once again, add any ideas that occurred to you which I may not have said. For many singles, weekends and holidays are the most difficult times to cope with. In reality, weekends and holidays are little more than other days of the week or year, but boy do we hang additional meaning onto them. And this meaning is perfectly fine when it's something that adds to your happiness, but when it adds to your pain, that's another matter. The problem singles have with holidays becomes apparent when you compare the circumstances of your life right now, which may leave something to be desired, with the same holiday of the best year of your life. I hear this quite frequently in my practice, my seminars, and on the radio, particularly around Christmas. In fact, holiday stress has gotten to be part of the American fabric. The most universal holiday issue centers around the expectations that you put on these particular days. So let's first talk about the attitudes behind these expectations. Then I'll give you a few suggestions for coping with those times that you may find to be especially painful, be they Christmas, New Year's Eve, Valentine's Day, another holiday, Saturday night, or your birthday. If there was ever an application to the adage that there is nothing to fear but fear itself, this is it. It's so easy to fear being alone on these occasions that it's sometimes hard to remember that as fast as they come, they go, and they're over. So first, it's important to remind yourself that whatever the occasion is you may be dreading, it will come, and then it will pass. Then instead of fearing it, you can defiantly choose to face it head on. If New Year's Eve has always been a night that you think of as a night for being with someone special, and this year, whether you like it or not, it looks like you're going to be alone, don't panic or scramble to do something that you would really rather not do in the first place. Instead, consider proving to yourself once and for all that you can stand being alone, that you can not only handle it, but resolve it as an issue in your life. One way to do this is to stay home and to set up your day or evening in a way that provides you with nourishment. You may find you even enjoy it. In your case, this could be your ultimate test in enjoying your own solitude. Rent a movie. Cook or order in your favorite dinner. Get yourself a bottle of champagne if you'd like for celebration purposes. I'm not going to say that this is going to be the best New Year's Eve, Christmas, or birthday of your life, but if you can firmly take the responsibility for your enjoyment of these occasions into your own hands, I can practically guarantee you you'll never again fear being alone on any of these days you now dread. Once you can do this, your decision to make plans or not to make plans will become a choice rather than something you tell yourself you must do. If Christmas is especially difficult for you, instead of thinking about the best Christmases of your life, think about all of them. Even the one or several when your life may have been characterized by relationship or other family problems. Chances are this one will fit somewhere in the middle. And even though Christmas is often thought of as being the warmest family day of the year, remember, Christmas night, not Christmas Eve, but Christmas night, is usually the worst night of the year for domestic violence. So get into the habit of looking at the situation in its entirety and don't make more of it than it is, and at the same time, don't make less of it than it is either, especially when you can conquer your fear. Also, regarding holidays and other times when you're alone, but would rather be with other people, consider some of these ideas. Do something for someone else who is more in need than you are. Orphanages, homes for the elderly, hospitals, and other organizations and institutions can use a great deal of help during the holidays. And who knows, you may even meet some good friends in that process. Consider this a bonus. If you're not feeling too altruistic this year, you may want to take a vacation either by yourself or with a group where there may be other singles. Remember, there are many people in the same social status that you are. If you're not invited to a party but wish you were, throw a party. Invite some friends over, even if it's just one friend. And again, take the initiative. Do something nice for yourself with this gift of time that you just haven't had the opportunity to get around to. But whatever you do, stop comparing your inner feelings with other people's happy outer appearances or with the images projected by the media. Because when you do that, you're comparing incomparable entities. If during holiday time you're finding yourself getting involved in a community cause, there's no reason why you can't continue with it after the holidays are over. This can have untold additional benefits for you. Doing fundraising for some community or other favorite cause that you believe in can be rewarding on many levels. For example, it may give you the opportunity to engage in certain activities that your regular job does not afford. This could provide you with invaluable contacts, skills, and experience. Take a moment now and add to your survival guide some ideas you may wish to explore, which could possibly even serve two purposes at the same time: provide you with some emotional rewards and become a valuable networking or vocational booster as well. As I mentioned earlier, I've asked many, many singles to identify their best and worst aspects of being single. By now, you've identified many of those things for yourself. I also asked practically all of those I interviewed for The Art of Living Single, what one thing would you most like to read about in a self-help book for singles? What was the answer? Well, perhaps you guessed it, and that is how to find a love relationship. The master dilemma that many singles face once they've become comfortable with the singles lifestyle is the dilemma that arises from the isolation of having no relationship versus the vulnerability that comes in with the kind of love relationship that seems most desirable. How to meet a new person for a love relationship is beyond the scope of this program. However, you can get our program called How to Find a New Love Relationship That Will Work for You. In that program, I cover all the necessary areas to do this important topic justice. Also, if you're reeling from an ended love relationship, you may wish to listen to our program Letting Go of Your Ended Love Relationship, Overcoming the Pain of a Breakup, Separation, or Divorce. These programs are all available by calling or writing us. What follows now is a series of exercises that will help you to further zero in on the issues you've identified so far, as well as some other ones which may come up for you as we continue through the program. And don't forget to stop the tape whenever it's appropriate while doing these exercises, then simply turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Make a list of at least 20 things that answer this question. If I had an ideal companion to live with right now, I would, and you fill in the blank. Complete this sentence with about 20 responses, if possible, of your own. Now, after you've done this, Go through your list and take a look at which things you're putting off doing with your life as a way of waiting for that next relationship. Which of your items really needs to be put off? Which can you figure out how to put into your life right now, either by doing them alone or with a platonic friend of either sex who's a member of your support system? In short, I'd like you to examine what you can do or wish you could do with your life right now, but are putting on hold, perhaps indefinitely. Now, granted, not everything you've listed falls into this category, but you'd be surprised at how short the list will be of things you can't enjoy until you're in a love relationship, once you discover you can do them on your own. If you started your own list of advantages and disadvantages of singlehood at the beginning of the program, go through that list now and add to it. If you haven't started this list yet, start it now. And next to each item, brainstorm some ways to minimize the disadvantages and maximize the advantages. Next to every negative, see if you can find a corresponding positive. You may wish to do this on a separate piece of paper. For example, if you've identified not having someone to live with as a disadvantage, identify an advantage to living alone, one of which may be that there's no one else to answer to, that you can come and go as you please, or that you're not irritated by anyone else's habits right now, or that you don't have to deal with other people's problems. If you've talked about not being in a love relationship as a disadvantage, acknowledge the fact that you're free to flirt and that you can have attention from anyone you'd like. Also, that you can live totally for yourself and not for any other person. That's certainly an advantage, even if it's only a temporary one in between relationships. Many people cherish the time in their lives when they could live totally for themselves. What are some other advantages? Another one is that you don't have to explain your moods to anyone. You don't have to compromise. Whether this is or is not your first choice of a lifestyle, it's important that you look at it as realistically and in as balanced a manner as possible. Take some time to work on this aspect of your survival guide now. Another issue that you may have identified could be connected with places that you have the most difficulty going by yourself. And indeed, many people do a combination of enhancing their pain and preventing their aloneness from becoming a nourishing state of solitude by believing that others, even total strangers, will judge them harshly for being alone at certain times. This shame is needless. There's no reason why you can't participate in activities you once enjoyed as a couple. If you're one of those people who stays at home not by choice, but because you believe it's wrong or shameful to go out or to be seen alone, then you're making things much harder on yourself. My experiences show me that those who can take the initiative under less than favorable circumstances are generally admired. If you avoid doing activities of your choice because of the vague risk that you'll be rejected by strangers, ask yourself whether those who would observe you being totally alone really care. When you see someone alone in a restaurant normally frequented by parties of more than one, do you condemn that person? And furthermore, so what if some people, such as those who are part of a couple, do? What's more important, their opinion of you or your right to enjoy the same universe as others who are part of a couple? In that spirit, I'd like you now to make a list of places that you would go to if you had no hang-ups at all about being seen alone. It can include nice restaurants, movies, the theater, certain kinds of vacations or tours. You know what those places are that you miss out on now. Include all the things that you can enjoy when you're part of a couple. After you've made your list, look each item squarely in the eye. Remember, it's my feeling that if it's worth doing, it can be done alone. As long as your personal safety isn't compromised, of course. Also, next to each item on your list, note the next step that you can take by giving yourself permission to avail yourself of that item. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. I'd like you now to identify the times when being single are most difficult for you. Is it bedtime? When you're invited to a party or an affair? At holiday time? When you're ill? You know when those times are. Make a list of them. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Next to each of the items you've listed, see if you can identify an idea or two where you can either utilize your support system or some of the affirmations you've identified to make those times easier. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. This next exercise is one of goal setting. I'd like you to take whatever situations you've identified for which you still see no solution and list them as they are now. Then, next to each item that you listed, identify what would be the ideal situation. This is the goal for each of your identified problems or issues. Remember, I'm not asking you for the solution yet, but just for the goal. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn the tape back on when you're ready to continue. Committing yourself to your goals really requires two steps. Writing down both the situation you'd like to change and the goal as you did a moment ago. The goal being what your life would be like if your issue were resolved. And then identifying the shortest distance between those two points. That is the issue and the goal. This is where it helps to problem solve and brainstorm. Here are a couple of suggestions to help you to find the best path to your goals. You might want to discuss your issue or issues with certain people you admire for having been in a similar state and triumphed over it. Close your eyes and visualize the three wisest people that you know or know of. Imagine them discussing your problem amongst themselves. What solution would they arrive at as to how you could best help yourself to resolve this situation? At your leisure, think of each issue you've identified using this technique. Here are some other considerations. Are your goals realistic and achievable? Are you ready to commit yourself to them by telling people about them? Can you identify exactly when you'd like to be further along with your goal, whether it be later on today, this week, next month, next year, 5 years, 20 years from now, or before the end of your life? Use everything you have, both your internal resources and your external ones, to come up with the solution as well as you possibly can. Most importantly, follow through on your plan and don't give up until you're where you want to be, at the goal or solution you've chosen. Think about your hobbies and avocations. What would you really like to do with your leisure time that you aren't doing? This may include things you didn't have time to do when you were last involved. Again, that one universal advantage of being out of a relationship is that you have a great gift of time. But it's a gift only if you can use it in a way that serves you, and you really could enjoy using it by yourself or with your friends. Maybe it's something you've done at another time in your life, or something new that you might want to try now. Here are some avocations that some very contented singles have recently mentioned to me. Painting, macrame, investments, meteorology, home decorating, boat building, juggling, scuba diving, model making, weaving, operating ham radio, writing, home electronics, calligraphy, playing chess, learning a new sport or language, stamp collecting, sewing, auto repairs, bird watching, tarot card reading, gardening, metalworking, record collecting, gourmet cooking, wine tasting, wood carving or doll making, playing bridge, personal growth activities, activities to enhance your religious or spiritual needs, dancing, whether ballroom, jazz, country, ballet, or modern, going back to school, filmmaking, video and photography, vocal and instrumental music, getting active on a computer bulletin board, learning single parenting skills, or just about any other activity where you can enjoy it either alone or with a friend or with a group of people, whether or not you meet anyone new in the process. Suppose you knew that you would be in an ideal relationship soon and had no worries about the prospect of remaining single forever. How would you live your life differently? Take some time to ponder this thought and list whatever it is that comes up for you. Make sure this list is added to your survival guide as an integral part. Turn off the tape and do this now, then turn it back on when you're ready to continue. Think about your concept of having peace of mind and happiness. You may even want to close your eyes and imagine that your life is working terrifically, that there is nothing that you're telling yourself about your life that should be different. In this frame of mind, exactly what's happening right now? How is your life different from what it is now? Whatever comes to mind for you is something that should be noted and once again added to your personal survival guide. Now here are some additional coping statements or affirmations that you may wish to add to your survival guide and possibly put onto 3x5 cards so you can utilize them at those times when you need them the most. Even when I'm feeling lonely being single, I acknowledge that there are people who are a lot more lonely being in relationships. This pain I feel will pass if I allow it to. I refuse to be afraid of being single. Instead, I'll use my affirmations to transform that fear to challenge, intrigue, enthusiasm, and freedom. And I'll acknowledge that no matter how well I do, being single will sometimes rattle me. But come to think of it, whose life is perfect anyway? I know the only one who can really make me happy in the end is myself, and I'll be as happy as I'll ultimately decide to be with or without a relationship. It may be very difficult to find the right relationship, but finding friends is much easier and can serve a lot of the same functions that many think only a relationship can fulfill. No one can ever take away from me my freedom, my ability to come and go as I please, and to associate with anyone I find interesting. I can plan for my own future, career or otherwise, without having to consult anyone. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, and that may be a cliche, but there are people who are part of a couple who may have just as much envy for me as I may have for the happiest married couple I know. When I think about others looking at me unfavorably because of my single status, I'll ask myself, is this accurate or am I merely putting myself down and imagining that others are also putting me down? The more isolated I've become, the harder it may be to become free of that isolation. But once I do, my choices are endless. If I can enjoy my own solitude, I can choose never to let anyone rob me of that solitude without providing me fulfilling company in return. If I can truly find solitude as a source of nourishment, I may also find that when I'm by myself, I feel anything but alone. And finally, life as a single is not impossible or too hard unless I define it that way. I hope you have found and continue to find this program helpful to you in understanding your issues as a single person and making the single life work for you, regardless of whether or not you're in a relationship. If you followed the exercises in this program, by now you have a personal survival guide that you can utilize whenever any of the issues you've identified, as well as new ones, come up for you. Add to your survival guide often. And remember to look at those 3x5 cards where hopefully you've put your most important affirmations whenever you start to feel those twinges of negativity. Use them as coping statements and you'll find that your life is more under your control and more in your own hands than you may ever have thought was possible. And the greatest benefit of all is that once you've been able to become your own best source of support and nourishment, it's one resource that you can rely on forever. Another source of support you can rely on is this audio tape program. Use it as often as you need to, and feel free to let us know how you're doing. We're very concerned about your progress and welcome any comment about this program that you may have. We'd be glad to let you know about some of our other related programs that may also help you. So if we can be of any assistance to you with respect to any resources that can help you further, feel free to call or write us. I'm Dr. Michael Broder, wishing you all the best.